Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3. Hello and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm Darren Moser and joined, as always, by my fellow co-host, fellow mutineers. Well, no, sorry, mutineers, that's not the right. Marooninears. Philip Gilfus and Daniel Prue. Gentlemen, how are things going in your Trek lives? Philip.
Well, I think you could call us the Maroon 3, which is different from Maroon 5. I think things are going...
We do sing, I mean, as people may have discovered in previous episodes.
That's right. Things are going well in my Trek lives. I finished the last season of Voyager, so I'm giving it a week of rest before I go into the final season of 24th century Star Trek. And then, of course, once that's done, I'll have to go to a safe place to get ready for Star Trek Nemesis. But then I'm looking forward to the new year when I start my Enterprise. I always have to say it like...
Enterprise.
I always thought I watched my Enterprise rewatch to get ready for, you know, an upcoming series that takes place after Enterprise, so...
Do we know that, Philip? Do we know that for sure?
Well, okay. We'll discover it one way or the other.
Ooh, okay. Nice one. How about you, Daniel?
Yeah, I'm in a lull. I am in the hold your breath and hope discovery makes it lull. Like put your you know, cross your fingers and maybe things will be okay at this point. I'm excited. But we're starting network news is starting to trickle. And we are getting to the casting news just recently came out, and obviously we're not going to spend too much time on that. But I like the casting news, but we'll see what comes of it and what happens beyond that.
Thanks. There we go. For that.
But see, guys, we could have a whole segment every week about Star Trek Discovery if we wanted to. We could do that now.
But we don't.
But no, we're not going to. We will still mention it as we are with bated breath waiting to see, but yes, May will be here shortly.
Well, hang on, January will be here even before that, and I'm pretty sure it was supposed to come out in January.
I don't know if you missed that memo, but
well, I think the thing is
filming will begin in January
because we know, or at least we think we know, that Anthony Rapp, who's been cast, is doing his Star Trek watch, judging by his very famous photo that's gone around of him with all of his Star Trek boxed media. And so maybe be watching the same thing at the same time. So, Anthony.
Just like them, guys. Just like them.
Yeah, yeah. So we have a redhead thing going on. So, you know, I'll just start tweeting him my Enterprise rewatch and let him know what's going on.
Imagine the enormity of, like, he gets cast for Star Trek. And, like, a good actor, he wants to do his due diligence. And his friend hands him all 700 plus episodes of Star Trek. Like, first of all, where do you start? But that's fine. That's a whole nother... But seriously.
Already told him where to. Don't worry, Dave.
Yeah, right. But the question really is, how much can you fit in before you actually have to start? Like, I mean, we do Star Trek rewatches very regularly, obviously, because we're Star Trek fans. But how do you... Like,
we've had years.
Years and years and no pressure. Like, imagine if that was
Look what happened to 7 and 9 when she tried to rush assimilating information. It did not go well, guys. It did not go well.
Voyager conspiracy.
But, yeah. So, well, we wish them all best for absorbing it and hopefully absorbing the good parts and thus wanting to put their mark on Star Trek but also help it to become something good, as we all hope it is. Well, today we are... what have I been doing? Thanks for asking, guys. Well, I've been watching some Star Trek episodes, but also I've been actually watching some other Star franchises. I just did a filibuster this week with Lee Hutchins, call him Hutch, and we talked about that other Star franchise we love, Stargate SG-1. So we had a fun time
when you say
reminiscing on that.
We.
As in... Lee and I.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Yes. I mean, who doesn't like Stargate SG-1? Don't answer that. And
I'm raising my hand right now, just so everybody knows.
So, well, you should listen to our episode, and we will convert you.
I don't think I've ever seen it, to tell you the truth.
I can't say I don't like it. I just don't know it.
Yeah.
So engaging the escape pod right now, boop, 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 and solo episode engage in 3, 2. No, just kidding.
Well, there's always more numbers in the. Anyway.
But anyway, so we're watching sci-fi, and you know, been a lot seeing a lot of good sci-fi movies. Saw Arrival, which I really
super
enjoyed.
Super good. And, Contact 2.0, so, what I like to call it, but it's okay.
Well, you know it. Yes. I think better than Contact.
Whoa, hang on. Let's cool our jets here and maybe give ourselves a month to process that. Anyways.
It's going to take a month to process Arrival because it is deep. But anyway, it's a good time for sci-fi. And we do have another, you know, sci-fi star movie coming out fairly soon. I want to say the time of this release. Really soon, like 2 weeks at least.
Oh man, it's gonna be so what are we, during this whole thing.
What are we talking about here?
I don't know. There's nothing else on my calendar.
Star Wars Rogue One. How can you get?
I'm not familiar with it.
Yes, aha, jokes. Like we don't know what it is. It's the best.
Well,
moving back to that Star franchise we know and love, it is time to talk about Star Trek. And today I wanted to do a topic. Science fiction, I love the wonder of it. I love new concepts, new ideas, and it's always fun when the characters also have a sense of wonder. And I feel sometimes we lose that. You know, in Star Trek, it's the future. I mean, it's like, oh, look at this replicator, and I just made an 8-course meal, and it was nothing. And, oh, look, we need to go to work, and I use the transporter, and we're amazed by this stuff because it's fiction. It's the future. It's not there yet. I mean, even though we've already caught up to iPads, VR, and, you know, a lot of other things that Star Trek first pioneered. But I wanted to focus on those pioneering episodes, those senses of wonder where our characters are still embracing that. So a bit of a broad topic, but I think it'll help. We can cut through all of that throughout the entire series. So first off, the genesis, as it were, of this idea was an Enterprise episode called First Flight. It's season 2, episode 24, and this is when they're pushing the warp 2 barrier. So this is back when, again, there's speed limits, but not because, you know, some bureaucracy told them to put the parking brake on. No, they want to go faster.
Wow, this turned harshly anti-government before I even knew.
But in this one, this is where Archer, and they're trying to be the pilot for the first warp 2 ship, and it's very right stuff. I mean, yes, very Apollo era, very, you know, trying to break that barrier. And I feel it sets that tone, though, for these. And Archer's always kind of had this kind of tone in the back of his head, that sense of wonder of we're being the first to be on this planet. We're being the first to go warp 5. And I feel Enterprise as a whole, but specifically this episode, embodies this concept. What do you guys think of a First Flight?
First of all, I want to say that it is one of my, I mean, it's definitely one of my favorite Enterprise episodes for sure. It's really solid. I really like the world building it does because, okay, I mean, even with Enterprise, if we include Enterprise in all of Star Trek canon, there's this kind of gray zone.
Wait, hold on. Was there a question? Is it series of like Enterprise? Did it really happen?
No, not at all. Because I love Enterprise. I really like Enterprise a lot. But I'm saying there is Enterprise did fill in a gap that we, there's this idea that, you know, you're filling in these gaps that we have, and Enterprise kind of halved the gap that we already knew. So Enterprise fills in this gap between First Contact, essentially, between our world. First Contact kind of represents where our world is now and where it go and where the Star Trek world is different, and then something else. But first of all, I was also thinking too, I really kind of want to do a deconstruction of Archer. We should do that because that would be a lot of fun. I am so lost on where my point was going.
Is it because of the death? Is it affecting you that much that you know, he died at the beginning of the episode? So
I mean, they almost named the Enterprise after him, right? They changed the name.
Wait, what's his name, by the way? This guy, because I want to talk about him.
Oh,
Captain.
The guy sitting next to Archer, obviously.
But
I mean, one name went down in history. I mean, it's obvious who's more important because there's only one name we actually remember.
Well, Archer, yeah, named books. It's a planet named after. Because I think you know, while someone hopefully is looking that up. I think because isn't that the well, I guess it's the B plot, even though it's sort of the way they tell the story. Aren't they looking for dark matter in the episode? Because it's he and T'Pol go out into like this nebula or something, and it's like, oh, maybe there's dark matter. And
tell me one of your Earth stories, Hubert, to pass the time.
Yes, right. Dark matter nebula.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out whether it's like they don't think dark matter exists or.
I'm sure the Vulcans don't think it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you never know. And he's like, she's like, no, we the Vulcans know it doesn't exist. Well, maybe, but maybe over here.
What would you say about time travel again? Yeah. Captain, you always bring that up to win an argument.
Robinson is the other guy.
Oh, yeah. It's almost gonna, there we go.
Yeah.
Robinson. Because I think, there were great, because it was like he died in some like training accident or something like. Stupid, you know, or something. So that's, I think it's really impactful of Archer that like, he never got a chance to be a captain. And they tell the story, which I think not only like what you say, Darren and Daniel, it's not only is it like from Earth to the Moon or whatever, but it's also the Enterprise origin story. Like, hey, who's this Lieutenant Tucker? You know, and you sort of get that beginning, and it's all very, very cool. It's sort of like, I don't know, trying to think of, you know.
Well, it also helps set up a lot of Archer because again we in Broken Bow we're just set up with here's your captain, like we don't know who this is and you're the captain of the first warp 5 ship, so it's helpful to kind of start showing that he's actually qualified.
Yeah, and well, I don't know, because I mean, he likes to just go straight into an ion storm, so I don't know how qualified that is as a captain, but
well, I mean, if we do have a whole episode about Archer, we can talk about, is he qualified or is it nepotism? Well, but if,
okay, Archer deconstruction coming later.
Yes, definitely, definitely. I actually like the character of Archer quite a bit. But yeah, this is...
Is that episode title going to be called Who's Your Daddy?
Because I'm pretty sure we all know who his daddy is. Yeah. I'm sorry, do you know who my father was? Anyways. But here's the thing. That is interesting. The episode is interesting because it does show him and Tripp's, at least, origin. And it's really cool. It's cool for that reason. And then it's also kind of what happens after first contact. What does that mean? You know what I mean? And even when Broken Bow came out and it was like, oh, we were, you know, 100 years and you know, just kind of glossed over. The Vulcans were always over our back. This kind of at least filled that in a little bit, like why they were holding us back, what that situation was like, and how frustrating it was. So I actually really, really like this episode. It fills in a lot of Star Trek lore that we didn't get before.
Well, it also makes me wonder about the origins of Starfleet. And Darren, I know you're sort of a NASA aficionado, so you may answer this question about how NASA worked. Like, you know, when NASA first started, like, where did the people come from? Like, did they just take people from, like, the Air Force or the U.S. Air Force? But, like, when Starfleet started, like, where did they get, you know, commanders? And, like, did you just, like, show up and, like, okay, you're captain now? You know, like, you know, when they started new, did they just take it from, like, the Earth military? Because the episode is very, like, you know, test flight pilots in the Air Force or in the Navy or, you know, all the people who have planes and do the test flights. And so that was sort of that feeling of, like, they're, like, not Top Gun kind of, but sort of. Sort of like competition between the two of them, the rivals, and then, you know, go over to the 602 club and, you know, down your beer because you live fast and die hard in the Starfleet test corps. And because it's interesting that Archer is a test, I don't know if that's really what he is, but that's sort of a test pilot here and like how that becomes Starfleet captain. You know, that's sort of you have to come up from somewhere, I know, but like how does, you know, becoming like, you know, being a test pilot sort of give you the credentials to be a captain?
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, yeah, okay, you can fly this thing. Now, how does that make you qualified to go forth as a representative of the entire species, as a captain of a group of however many people? Like, how does that not that it doesn't necessarily, but what is that connection there? Like, I get what you do. And that, yeah, the episode kind of answers it pretty well. But it is an interesting kind of story. Like, how do you get to that point?
Yeah, and then, because he's, what, Commander in that episode, I believe? And you have Commodore Forrest, I think.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Which is actually a really cool callback.
Yes.
He has a very big hat. That's how you know.
And so, but no, I, like you said, I do think it is, like, what you're trying to say, Daniel. Like, after Warp 1, you know, and we don't really get, this is kind of what I always wanted from Enterprise, which I know is hard to show because it's so, unfortunately, fictionalized. Like, how do we become Earth Utopia, like, in the next 25 years, apparently, like, you know, post-World War III, and then, like, 25 years later, like, eh, paradise, we're good. That was very quick. But anyway, you know, but to have that sort of, now are we going to just, like, what's the purpose? Like, Starfleet, like, we want to get out there, but, you know, Warp 1, I guess, is still a turtle's pace compared to, you know, the solar system and everything else, and so Warp 2 and everything else, and so. Because I think they talk about, like, oh, the Warp 3 barrier was then, you're at the end of the episode, it was like, oh, so many years later, and then blah, 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 or something, but.
Those are all really good points about Archer and that portion of Starfleet history, how it's all knit together. Yeah, I mean, with, like you were asking, Philip, I mean, NASA started as a civilian agency, and it did pull a lot of its pilots from the Navy, and, you know, the Air Force, and the like. So it, but yeah, it's like, where do we, it's always that transition. It's like, these are the spacefarers, the buccaneers, the people who are out there in the stars, and then they just kind of get absorbed, and it's like, oh, hey, we got this new, this new thing in town called Starfleet. If you want to come hitch your wagon to our train, it'll be in the stars. but moving on to TOS, the original series, you know, the one that actually stood out the most to me of that sense of wonder is the Genesis device in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Not the terrible pretend to be Star Trek II, Star Trek Into Darkness, but instead...
Oh, I thought you meant Star Trek Phase 2.
No, no, not Phase 2. Or Phase 3 Discovery, no. But the Genesis device, I mean, you listen to the recording tapes as... you know, Spock and Kirk and McCoy are talking about it, and they're in awe. They're like, the power and what this thing can do is baffling and awe-inspiring to them. And these are people who live and work in space. I mean, we're born in Iowa, but live and work in space. And it impacts them in such a way because, yeah, it turns any barren moon into a life-sustaining and life-containing body. It's a replicator on a massive scale, basically.
Yeah, but it kind of reminds me of, like, those artistic drawings of an architect will do, like, yeah, that's what you think the building's gonna look like. And so now we have the Genesis promotional video. I'm like, yeah, right. And how, what's it really gonna look like? And then suddenly they go, like, 5 years over the time, and it's that, you know, I
good thing there's no money in the future, because otherwise we'd be way over budget on the Genesis device.
The one thing that always strikes me about watching that moment, and I guess I get it for dramatic purposes, is how extreme McCoy's reaction is. Maybe this is just me, because all I see is like the wonder. I'm like, oh, cool. It's like, you know, instant terraforming. And McCoy's like, my God, man, terrifying planets. We've become God now. And he's like tearing his hair out. I'm like, calm down, you know, like, it's not that, you know, I guess, like, yeah, okay, anything can be turned into a weapon, but I'm like, I don't even go there. Like, it'll take me like 30 minutes to go to, oh, and it could also be a weapon.
Well, I mean, I guess we can give McCoy the credit for that, right? Like, because it's like, if you were in the late 30s and you saw a nuclear reactor and you recognized what it could potentially be used for, that's what McCoy is doing, right? Yes, this isn't this. What we're seeing on the screen here is not representative of a way to kill people, but this could definitely be used to destroy an entire species, essentially. So we give
I want you to play those promotional like 50s videos about like your atomic kitchen. Yes, everything in your kitchen powered by the safe, clean atomic energy.
Get ready for Genesis. Don't forget, kids, duck and cover. It will. Help as the Matrix rewrites you into, yeah, no, you're dead. But yeah, I mean, the Klingon Chancellor, I mean, he's like, this could wipe us out, because he's absolutely right. You shoot this at Kronos, and now you literally just wiped out not only billions of Klingons, but you just totally terraformed their planet to be like you want it. Like, it's actually really dangerous. Good thing they only made one.
You know, we should definitely talk sometime about how Genesis just disappeared after that,
wasn't there something in the books called the Genesis Wave? I don't even know.
Oh, there was, but I've heard of that. But yeah.
I never read that, but.
But yeah, that's true. It was interesting because you always hear, you know, terraforming is also, you know, in TNG and every, well, I don't know if they ever did it in DS9, but anyway, but
yes,
obviously
terraforming
still goes on. But yeah, it's not like, yeah, no one ever mentions like, man, find that Genesis thing had worked.
It's like any moon that's barren. You're like, you know, I want to live here. Click. And now it's a life sustaining.
But then again, then we get into the, I was going to say argument, healthy debate about Star Trek 2 versus Star Trek 3. Because Star Trek 2 obviously is a very much more, you know, life or death, life from death, which is a very familiar theme in Western thought, or world thought, I suppose. But, you know, this new planet and we creation and hey, this is great. And Star Trek 3 is like, just kidding, it's crap, blows up. But hey, we got Spock back, huh? I mean, we killed a bunch of people and a planet and a ship.
True.
But, you know, Spock's back. But so, you know, I think there's a sort of hopefulness, like, if Star Trek 3 hadn't happened, would we look at Genesis differently? As Savick says, you know, you cheated today, that, you know.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Like, would we look at Genesis differently? Like, to me, Genesis, I mean, it was a weapon. I mean, you know, essentially, even if it wasn't developed as such, it certainly would have been used that way. And
it's also, does it make sense? I mean, I guess it's fiction, so it doesn't have to make sense. But like that, you know, when you fire it at a planet, it turns into a terraform planet. But you fire it into space and it creates a planet. Like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that
was
nonsense.
Just thinking that, because obviously one, it turns the natural nature preserve that is the Montaro Nebula into a planet.
Does it have to be completely lifeless?
But that other thing that's true, it's like, okay, this isn't a system.
There's no
sun.
Star. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, okay, you made a life-sustaining planet that's a rogue planet now in the middle of nowhere, and it's like, that you kind of forgot something. You need
what's the over under on the planet on the life forms there? Maybe a week at the most, probably. I would say, yeah.
I like these cookies don't taste right. Did you put flour in it? Flour.
Go back to its new matrix.
I do agree though that, and this would have been my first choice too for like awe inspiring moments in TOS. Like I would have also said. The motion picture too also has that kind of thing, but a lot of
that's not awe. That's their jaws on the floor as the ship slowly goes by.
A lot of TOS is more routine than anything. You know, I mean, it's been, even though like we're just coming into it, it's kind of an established universe where like, even though they're kind of coming across these crazy things that they've necessarily never seen, it's very routine for them to come across things that they've never ever seen before. So in the original series, I feel like that kind of whoa doesn't happen that often, you know?
And I would think, and I know this is getting a little deep here. I'm going to say this and I might be wrong. I think TOS is the most humanist series because anytime there's something new, like gods or powerful beings or new, whatever, it always comes back to, well, humans rule. You know, we're still good. We're the better. You know, we're awesome. You know, like, and whereas I think like TNG and DS9 and Voyager, there's more of an, oh, something new. There's a new life form. And, you know, we need to understand it. And then TOS is more like, I mean, we're pretty cool. We're awesome. We're better than it. We can explain this away, or we can blow up the machine, or we can kill the god's power, or, you know, it's not many like new life. I mean, except the Horda. That's the only thing I can really think of as far as like there's a new life form. It's and it's awesome. All the rest are like, meh. I think we're still pretty awesome.
But even then, it wasn't so much like an awe-inspiring moment as like a recognition that we see our limits and we don't understand this creature as it is. But it's not like, whoa, like, whoa, you know? That's kind of what I
think. We're the bad guys? Oh, man. But
we were the bad guys all along.
I have met the enemy, and he is us.
We just start quoting Shakespeare, and we'll figure it out.
Actually,
human rights. It's comic. Even the term.
It's a graphic novel, and I can't think of it. It's not Bone. It's actually a comic strip. It's from long ago. I can't remember. Sorry, guys.
Shakespeare has no place in Star Trek.
Well, in TNG, there's a couple different options. I'm going to pick the one of the good episodes and make it a little easier. But I like in Darmok, where you have first contact with a species. And not that we don't see that in several times, but this time, because it's very personalized, it's not so much the team is figuring out, it's Picard is figuring out. It's all on Picard to figure out this first contact situation and save the day. And he does. And you can tell, like, as he is talking to the captain and figuring out, you know, what, you know, their metaphor and all of that. Once he makes that realization and it clicks.
Metaphor!
Like, oh, metaphor! He's speaking metaphor on Tuesday. But, you know, even though the other guy would have no idea who Gilgamesh is, but he's like, hey, good story, good try, sir. But not going to help. But that's, I think, a good episode of a character.
He really slays with that story.
A specific sense of wonder as he's trying to communicate. And it's nice for once in a while not having the universal translator just solve all those linguish problems.
Yeah, and it's Pogo, by the way, is where that quote was from. I think the first contact nature, like you said, kind of gets rote sometimes. Oh, it's an alien of the week, blah blah blah. But, like, you know, not being able to communicate. Or even the ones where we meet, like, the Shellyak, who are just so different, or, you know, or Horta, like I said earlier, but, like, ones that are just so completely non-humanoid, that's always good. But I think with Darmok, there's a challenge you have to overcome to have first contact. It's just not like, oh, like the episode, First Contact, where you just have to have, you know, sex with aliens and, I don't know, and stuff happens. But, yeah, I think Darmok is so interesting because it is the struggle of communication, such a basic thing, in order to make that first contact. And then, I mean, everyone knows, well, if you know the story, obviously the common enemy, nothing helps, you know, cement a relationship and a friendship, you know, like a common enemy, just like the, you know, the Romulan threatened Enterprise with the Andorians and the Tellarites and everyone else. But yeah, it's a great story as Picard kind of has to stumble through what that, I forget his name, what the captain is trying to get him to understand.
Yeah, the down, or not the downside, but the lesser episode, what I was thinking of was The Chase, where, again, you have Picard putting the pieces together. This, I listed that one more because it was him and his archaeological element. You know, he's like, you found one intact. I will discard this later when I don't even care about it. You know, and again, it's great seeing our characters get excited, get interested by something. I mean, that happens a lot on Voyager and DS9 and some of the other shows. Maybe not as much in TNG. It's and TOS, like you said, it's a little more. They have to, for them, it has to be every day because we're the ones, the viewers, that it's extraordinary. Because if it's super extraordinary for them, it's like, but haven't you been flying in space for 5 years? Like, why is this such a big deal?
Well, I think just because I'm in that current rewatch, I think the thing about Voyager is that, you know, because they're ostensibly on their way home. But, you know, things will happen, like a pulsar or a nebula or whatever, and they'll be like, okay, let's stray a little bit and go check this thing out. You know, that there still are explorers. You know, it's sort of like the argument between the, I'm looking at it right on my shelf, and I'm blanking on the name of it. The other Starfleet ship, they find that the whole episode, Equinox. It's not like the Equinox, well, they're just like, we're going home, and we're going to kill the aliens to do it. You know, Voyager's like, we're going home, but we're still going to do the Starfleet mission of exploration. So, like, that early, you know, like, the cloud where Neelix is like, are we just going to stop at every place, you know? You know, and you know, at every place, you know? And, like, Jonah to the whale, we're going in. But I think that's sort of that sense of wonder. And I think TNG does it to a little bit extent. You know, they're always, even though they're sort of their mission is, like, the Starfleet tells them, go over here, go over there. But with Voyager, it's sort of a self mission. I think that's kind of a cool part.
Right. As long as we generally head towards the Alpha Quadrant, we can explore over here, right?
Yeah, it's I mean, if your everyday job is the unknown, it's going to take a lot to kind of floor you. It's going to take a lot to get to the point where you're like, whoa. You know,
yeah.
If every day you're literally discovering something that nobody's ever discovered before. Yeah, it's not surprising that sometimes it's hard to do that.
I mean, I'm picturing like the ensign or lieutenant on year four of the Enterprise's 5-year mission, you know, having their little stylus on their 5-inch thick iPad going like, you know, dear mom and dad.
It's for the battery, Philip. It's for the battery.
Dear mom and dad, encountered godlike being again. But it was a Tuesday, so we figured whatever.
No problem. No problems at all.
It's a Tuesday. Nothing matters on Tuesdays. Well, moving into DS9, I think you guys kind of could see the writing on the wall on which one I'm going to pick for this one. Explorers, Season 3, Episode 22, The Solar Sail and Faster Than Light Travel, Sailing Through the Stars. You know, who wouldn't like that? I mean, Jake first was kind of like,
oh, Dad, do I have to go?
But yeah, this one, I mean, you see, not since Sisko got, I mean, he's an obsessive man. I mean,
the clock,
the solar sail,
the clock,
the obelisk,
the Bajorans.
I mean, he just get, you know, it's real. You know, he really, really gets into
baseball.
His passion. So he dominates the Reddit board on the DS9 station for all of his favorite topics. But in Explorers, I mean, I like this episode. It's not a terrible one. I know it's not some people's favorites, but
no, I like it.
It's fun how, and it's a great father-son story, and it's just very, it's very chill. It's like, okay, no Dominion War right now. Nothing's attacking us. Let's just do a little exploring, and when we get there, the Cardassians won't abduct me, which would probably happen years later if this was to happen.
You know, this episode, as kind of an aside, reminds me of, like, you know, this idea that, like, we need to get in touch with nature and, like, go camping and learn all these kind of, like, I hate this idea. This sounds awful. Like, this is like your dad taking you camping and, like, oh my God, this would be my worst nightmare. I'm totally with Jake. I do not want to do this. Like, oh no, you have to see how these people traveled faster than light before we traveled faster than light the way we do. It's like, no, I don't need to do that. I can just go and travel faster than light. I don't care. But yes, it is. It's a good episode for that. And I
feel like Jake would be tweeting, instead of like first world problems, it'd be like 24th century problems. Like, dad didn't bring a replicator. Have to eat real food. # 24th century problems.
Well, I mean, and when he did take him camping, remember Quark and yeah, Nog right. came along and they got captured by the Vorta. So
right.
it just, it doesn't work out.
I don't remember the very specifics of that episode. So right now in my mind, I'm questioning the science of what exactly they were using as propulsion for their sails.
It was, solar sails.
Right. No, I remember
solar winds. But then, like, how did it end? Because it was something about, like, was it a nebula that they finally entered, like, entered them into warp or something? I can't remember that. Like, that explained why.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like, how did they? Okay, I mean, unless it was light rays that they were using as propulsion, I don't understand how they achieved warp. And even if they used light rays, anyways, it doesn't matter because the episode probably answers it. And it's been a little while since I've seen it. But. Yeah, it's another one of those interesting episodes because it's like, this is kind of what Enterprise existed for. Like, how do we recapture that wonder of doing this stuff that we've already kind of grown accustomed to in the 23rd and 24th centuries? Like, how do we show that this is amazing? You know,
yeah.
there's a very famous bit that Louis C.K. does about cell phones and how, like, this technology is amazing and all we can do is complain about how slow it is sometimes and how it doesn't do exactly what we want sometimes. But it's like, you're communicating with people all over the world instantaneously. You have no right to complain. This is kind of essentially the same thing as that.
Yeah, I mean, I think about, because or for Ben, it was ostensibly like, because he's such a Bajorophobe, or file. Daniel is a Bajorophobe.
I am.
Ben is a Bajorophile. Yeah. No, I'm talking about the Bajora, not the Bajorans. They're terrible. Bajora, that's where it's at. But anyway.
Oh God, no! I'm not gonna go down that road. Sorry.
See, I'm like, you probably even hate this premise of the episode. I'm like, oh, ancient Bajorans. Who cares? But anyway, but the ostensibly for Ben as a Bajorophile, it's like, you know, the mystery of the ancient Bajorans. You know, because I guess how'd they get to Cardassia? Is that what they were trying to solve? Like. Which is weird to think that they went there first. But anyway, trying to solve that, you know, because it's like, you know, we have the Earth mysteries. I don't know if they are still mysteries, but, you know, like Stonehenge, you know, how did that get created? Or the pyramids and I mean, you know, we have our theories and everything, but, you know, I guess there's still some questions of like, how is it so, you know, mathematically correct and whatever. But anyway, but like that they were able to solve, quote unquote, solve this sort of mystery of the ancient Bajorans. So I think the only thing that kind of throws me off, and I'm not an anthropologist, but like the fact that like the ancient Bajorans were supposed to have like had space travel, like I having not seen the episode recently, like how many more years before Earth did, and like we're ahead of them kind of now. I mean, I got it, the occupation, but like that was only 20 years ago. It's not like it reset their entire civilization. But I don't know. That was the one thing that always throws me off, that like the ancient Bajorans were in space like 1,000 years or more before Earth or something. And I was kind of like, eh, okay.
How hipster did they sound when they were like, oh, we were, when your species was in diapers, we were, we were out traveling the stars. But I mean, where did they go? I mean, I guess as far as Cardassia.
Yeah, well, and the Cardassians were like saying like the episode Explorers is a Star Trek episode of Mythbusters, because you have Cardassia saying it never happened and the Bajorans are a bunch of liars, and, you know, Ben's like, we're using the same materials that the Bajorans use, and we're going to bust this myth about whether warp speed is possible.
So far, I was going to go with Bajorophiles for the name of this episode, but now I'm shifting more towards like a Mythbusters type.
I don't know if we can do it with the actual stamp Mythbusted over like the Bajoran solar ship or something. I don't
know. Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. And, you know, and I love how when they get there, and Ducat's like, oh, yes, and our scholars just discovered this hidden government classified text that says we totally hung out with the Bajorans like a long time ago. Fancy that. Well, that moves us to our last episode. And I didn't actually pick an episode specifically for Voyager. I went with more of a basic theme of the way that show treats the Doctor and Seven of Nine. So these are people who, I mean, I know that they're both based off of human, but they, you know, they're the non-human character, really. I mean, sorry, Tuvok, but this is where the story is going to focus. And
but with Seven, you have to say, sorry, every character Voyager. This is what the story is going to be about.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry. So, yeah. Guess what? Doctor, episode, seven, seven, doctor, seven, Janeway, seven, seven, doctor. I mean, that's pretty much season six, right?
Like, I imagine, like, there's wheel they spin, and, like, the Doctor, Janeway, and Seven colors bars are, like, huge, and then, like, the Paris and B'Elanna ones are, like, little strips, and Harry one is, like, a line, and they just, like, spin it and be like, oh, what are the odds? It's a Janeway episode.
The Chakotay one is literally just a dotted border of something else, yeah.
They look on their calendar, and they're like, oh, it's a 8th Thursday that falls on a 13th, so Chakotay episode.
Well, I think the Chakotay episode was always on February 29th, but well, I think I don't know. I'll go with Doctor for a second, because I think the thing with the Doctor is that for a lot of the crew, and even for himself, it's kind of like what we talked about with sort of roteness, like, he's in a hologram medical, of course, that's what he does. But, you know, he sees himself kind of that way as well, you know, look, that's all I am. And then where he has Kes, who is awesome and my favorite, and don't ever say anything bad about her except for Fury, which sucked, you know, sort of opens his mind and opens the captain and the crew's mind that there's something more to him, that he, you know, she's like, well, of course you're not just a hologram. You're a member of the crew. You're the doctor. And maybe that's a bit of her naivety or simplisticness, but she says it in a way that's very assertive, like, no, of course you are. And so I think that opens up his mind and, you know, opens up the rest of the crew minds, even the captain, to sort of, like, she sort of plays, like, matchmaker between the doctor and the captain, where, you know, she goes to the captain with his, Kes goes to the captain with his concerns, and Janeway's like, well, I hear he's rude and blah, 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 and we should reprogram him. And Kes sort of opens both their minds, the doctor and the captain, to there's new possibilities. And I think, as you see, both the doctor himself grow and the attitudes of the crew around him grow in treating him differently, I think that is sort of opens up the wonder that it's, he's not just a hologram, even though that's pretty wondrous to me, but, you know, pretty rote, I guess, by then, that he is, you know, he can be a person, a self-actualized person, and get the mobile emitter and all these different things.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely had a lot of fun with these characters, and it's interesting how these kind of characters in Star Trek, they always know what they are. I mean, Data knows he's an android. Seven knows she's a former Borg. Like, they're not surprised. It's not some sort of conspiracy to hide their not being human. You know, they're not being humanness. But instead, we're able to tell these stories where, you know, it's like they're learning things for the first time as an adult. You know, and so it's like the doctor's learning, this is what it's like to have a family or experience loss or death. And Seven's like, this is what it's like to be a family and experience loss or death. And it's, or Data, like, his experience of family or loss or death. But, you know, I'm not saying Star Trek was original all the time. But,
look, an android is not a restored Borg, is not a holographic doctor. It's completely different characters.
Right. Yes, exactly. But, you know, and then, you know, Quark, he learned about joining a family and life. No, just kidding.
And then he got visited by those three ghosts during Trexmas. And, oh, wait, never mind.
The Ferengi of futures past. A prophet's lost.
By the way, wouldn't that be an awesome premise if there was a Christmas Carol version of Deep Space Nine with Quark? Because obviously the Scrooge metaphor is apt. And so, you know, I think it would have been just something.
It would work really well with Quark, but I see Odo as much more of the Scrooge than Quark.
Oh, interesting.
Well, right now, guys, we got to cast the Christmas Carol DS9 version. Quark is Scrooge, obviously. Who's Marley? Is that, well, Odo?
Has to be someone who died, because he has to be a ghost.
Okay. It could be. Oh, no. Doesn't matter. The answer to your question is Morn. Morn.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Okay. A bit of a stretch, but we come up with that. Okay. Who is Bob Cratchit?
Let's not be so static. I think it should be Marta.
I think Rom should be Bob Cratchit.
Making it a woman instead. You don't have to, everyone doesn't have to be.
Okay.
So wait, you're asking who's going to play the Kermit role?
So Bob Cratchit is Marta, which Marta's why am I blanking on
that's
that? That's
Rom's wife.
That's Lita.
Sorry.
I was going to say, I'm not remembering the Marta character.
Sorry.
Okay.
Well, Marta is the name of the changeling, right? In Undiscovered Country.
You may be right. Now, Lita, Darren, you're thinking of Futurama, okay? You're completely...
But that works because then you have the Bob Cratchit family, yeah, which is also made up of Rom, who stays at home.
Wait, does that mean...
Nog.
Does that mean Nog is
Nog
Tiny,
is Tiny Tim?
Tim.
Nog is Tiny Tim.
Is it because he has a crutch?
He literally loses the leg. Of course he's Tiny Tim.
I think we just hit canon right there. Oh, Lord. We're sorry, Aaron. We're just... But, okay, so then... any other characters? Fred, the nephew of Scrooge? Could that be...
Oh, hang on. Why are you casting these really obscure people? Let's start talking about who's going to play the ghosts of Christmas past.
Okay.
I was fleshing out the mortals first. Okay, that's
well. Odo
better.
Has to be. I don't know. He could be future, maybe.
I was thinking he would be
Though he did know Quark in the past, so he could be past as well.
I think Odo would work as past because he's the first one, and he's kind of freaking him out. Like, what's going on?
I think Jadzia is a very good present because that's a very jolly, happy, you know,
yeah,
figure.
I was trying to think the most jolly person.
I mean, it's Jadzia.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
And then who's going to be future then? This is the
founders, obviously.
Well, it has to be someone shrouded.
Not the founders.
It'd be the Grand Nagus,
prophets.
Possibly.
I sang the prophets.
Oh my god! Can you imagine the Nagus as the coach? He would be the most obnoxious.
Fuck! You no, died.
But
without prophet,
the spirit of future doesn't say anything. No, so he's in the cloak.
Well, he has a
stick.
He
doesn't say anything for the first little bit, but then he does. Yeah, he's got his stick.
And he has his assistant right next to him, you know, the bodyguard.
I don't know. That's a really good question. Who would be... it's got to be kind of a shocking... Yeah, I guess the Nagus would work because of the stick.
I think it could work.
I would say Nagus or wormhole aliens.
Well, it has to be someone he's actually... He doesn't really care about them.
He has had an authentic orb experience, Philip. I don't know if you know this.
What about Worf? Should Worf be the...
but that's a lot of people. We haven't cast O'Brien or Bashir. I'm just going through the list here.
Well, I'm not saying...
Or Kira.
O'Brien and Bashir are obviously the two collectors collecting money for the poor.
Oh, the orphans.
Tiny
the Bajoran city. Orphans.
The Bajoran orphans. The Bajoran war orphans. And then, let's see. Kira could be...
Oh, it's funny because I'm going to be in Christmas Carol next month, so I should really know this story.
Kira could be the... Well, there's Scrooge's sister.
That's because that's sort of the heart... Well, he has the lost love, and he has his sister, right. So I don't know.
So who would Quark's lost love be better as Jadzia, then?
Oh... Interesting. Maybe. Well, now, if you did it in season 7, yes.
That's true. That's true. Oh, I think that's roughly our DS9 A Christmas.
Oh, well, I can see that Bashir can just play, like, there can be, like, some sort of medical, like, it's not Shades of Grey, but it can be, like, you know, in that thing where maybe Bashir, you know, in the real world is treating Quark, but Quark is sort of, you know, going into this...
They get stuck inside the holodeck and they have to play out the Christmas Carol. It's all in Quark's psyche.
Well, you have to get Quark to change his mind, or else it won't work. Kind of like Doctor Who Christmas special, the Christmas Carol.
They're like, it won't end unless Scrooge repents at the end. He's like, I'm not repenting. This guy is great. He's got tons of money. This is wonderful. No, you have to get this, Quark. You need to repent by Christmas Day.
Be Christmas. So, like, it has to be some obscure, like, Ferengi or Bajoran.
The Bajoran Festival of Lights, or
no,
whatever
there is,
you want to
call
it.
No, there's the actual Bajoran holiday. Oh, goodness. The Bajoran holiday they celebrate on Deep Space Nine. Fill in it.
I thought that was the thing of lights, but maybe...
Well, it's called a thing. I just can't remember off the top of my
head. Yeah.
No, but it wouldn't make sense for it to be a Bajoran one. It would have to be a Ferengi. Like an ancient Ferengi.
The annual accounting of the tithe, you know, something like that. It's all about money and making profit. Profitmas.
I'm really thinking hard now. I mean, we've had 700 plus episodes. Was there literally never? We've adopted all sorts of
stuff. Well, there was literally Christmas Carol in TNG. Ooh, I see you. With Data playing Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah, with Data pretending to be Scrooge. Yeah. Yeah. Because I recently just listened to the Christmas Carol read by Patrick Stewart, which is a great audiobook version. It's really, really good. But yes, yeah, so okay. Well,
wait, we hijacked.
That was
this.
A little bit of a diversion, but it was well welcomed.
It's totally appropriate too, because we are now right in December.
Don't say we're not topical, viewers. We're well. If you wanted to send a communique to us on who you should think should play the Ghost of Christmas Future for Quark's. I mean, forget our original topic. We actually...
Peldor Joy! You know, it's the day of gratitude. The Gratitude Festival.
Peldor Joy. There you go. You. It's a Peldor Joy carol. Oh, I think we need a t-shirt. But you can send us a message to our base here on SETI Alpha 3. Just visit thenerdparty.com/contact to reach the three of us. Or you could leave an iTunes review and rating. It would help us spread the show. Now, Philip, where can someone find you online to talk to you about Peldor Joy a Carol.
Well, as someone who will be playing Bob Cratchit, and I think one of the ghosts, I'm not sure. I don't know. My fiance tells me she's who I work for. They can find me on Twitter at NC Public Servant, and we can talk about all things about, you know, that it's just give us a day off from podcasting. It's just Christmas Day, you know.
I expect you want the entire day off. And Daniel, where could someone talk to you about Odo, the ghost of Christmas past, Peldor Joy past?
Oh, poor Odo. They can find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word. Like, is this my first Christmas?
Well, the first Christmas you gave me your heart.
But the very next star date, you gave it away.
On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles this holiday season, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. They're always watching. They've designed a system to keep you down. They're meddlesome. Hello, friends. This time for a revolution. Fight the power and pave the way for a brighter tomorrow with December's Rebellious Crate, featuring exclusive items from Assassin's Creed, Mr. Robot, Firefly, and more, including an exclusive Funko Pop, our monthly t-shirt, and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's crate when that cutoff happens. After that, it's over. Make sure to head to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and enter code nerdparty to save even more on a new subscription today.
Well, and if someone wanted to find me, they could go to drscifi.com, either the website or Twitter at drscifi, where they can find my Stormtrooper blog, also my other podcast, which I do with my daughter called Goodnight Moon, where we talk about Starfleet and Star Trek. Wait, no, sorry, that's this one. Where we talk about space exploration, and it is a lot of fun. Well, guys, it's been a lot of fun talking about this here on SETI Alpha 3. I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
Prue.
Stranded here on SETI Alpha 3. At least it's the holiday season. Peldor Joy.